Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
I'll start the show with a little bit of a confession. I guess confession's not really the word. But, and maybe you can relate, I have just had a case of sadness lately. You ever feel just melancholy, kind of maudlin, sad, and you can't really pinpoint why? And I want to be careful here because, you know, I really got to be careful. So there are many, I think, legitimate instances where people who feel sad or depressed or overwhelmed about something and genuinely need support will reach out on whatever platform they can, often social media. And they're looking for someone to kind of lift them up, you know? Hey, we've all helped a friend through a difficult time. I think that's totally legitimate. So I'm not trying to in any way diminish that. But we also know people who are just a little bit too performative, and it happens a little bit too often. So you log on. This is often known as vague booking, where they don't give any specific details, but it sounds very Shakespearean. You know, I wish certain people, whom I will not name, would not be so toxic about issue X, which I will not detail, and then go talk about you behind your back to other people, who I will not specify, feeling sad, please send good vibes. Okay, well, on the surface, okay. But when you see a lot of that stuff, it does two things, in my humble opinion. The first thing is you become the boy who cried wolf, or the girl, or whoever who cried wolf, right? There's so much of it that people stop listening. It becomes a car alarm that people tune out. They're like, oh, well, that person happens to live at the intersection of mellow and drama, right? Melodrama. And the second thing it does is I think it adds a burden to the lives of other people who are going through their own struggles. And we don't often think about it in that way. I've been working on it myself, where if you go and you take the weight on your shoulders, sometimes I think it helps to have that weight shared with loved ones, with people who care about you. But sometimes it also adds the burden to them in their already burdened lives. And I think we have to be a good steward of that. There's so many gears in this machine, and I worry someone's going to, you know, harvest a soundbite. They're going to quote mine and say that Seth doesn't care about people experiencing hardship who reach out for help and support. Hell, that's probably what I'm doing right now. If nothing else, I'm just venting, expressing. But I've just been going through a moment of melancholy. It might have something to do with the change of the seasons. Do you feel that when you come out of wintertime and head into spring? Is spring fever a legitimate thing? I've heard that. Like spring fever means that you feel more tired, you know. Your blood is thickened because of the cold weather is what we'd always heard. And it takes some time to navigate through that. I wake up. I've been waking up 3 a.m. I just stare at the ceiling and I've just been overwhelmed at all of the craziness and the hate and the bigotry and the divisiveness and the problems. And I don't know why. You know, it's the difference, I think, between reflection and rumination. Because I think reflection is critical. We have to be able to reflect on the good and the bad. But then sometimes we slip into rumination. We're just wallowing, right? We're wallowing in it, and that becomes really problematic. And I struggle sometimes with that when I read the headlines and I see the actions of the theocrats and the zealots and the Christian nationalists and the white supremacists and the people who so gleefully want to splinter us into these little tribes of bigotry, when the truth is we could all do so much if we just saw the humanity in each other. I'm sitting across from some friends. I know there are some who would be like, well, why would you be friends with those people? But they are evangelical or at least casual Christian, Republican conservative types. They go to church. I know more about the Bible than they do by far, but they are casual cultural Christians and they vote R, Republican across the board. And they were talking about something, I think, and there may have been a jab at the libs or the liberals somewhere at the table. And I, in that moment, had a tremendous feeling of isolation and aloneness. I just look at them and I want the light bulb of epiphany, of humanity, to go off in their heads. There are some people who get so mad at me when I talk about my values as a humanist, and they're like, well, are you host of the Thinking Atheist show, or are you host of the Liberal show? It's all equally bad. It's all tainted. I'm just going to make a false equivalence claim and walk out the door and look down my nose from my superior perch at all the rest of you who are just sheeple. Now, you participate in the process because you think it matters. No, no. I am neither conservative nor liberal. I am outside it all. Well, aren't you special? I think that's just a position of privilege, or it's a cop-out. Who in the world could look at the two main political forces, the two main cultural forces in the United States, and decide that they're equal? I mean, who can do that? I'm sitting across from people I care about, and I wrestle with the fact that I love them, and I genuinely do. And I crave their friendship, and we have a lot that we really enjoy. And then I think the jab at the Democrats means you are what? In opposition to so many of my values. You don't just think differently, but you may be working to defeat the very causes that I hold dear. Your party is working to co-opt the whole country, to make it a church. Theocracy, not democracy. And everybody who's not some flavor of Christian becomes a second-class citizen. That includes me. You're at war with LGBT people. Talk about second-class citizens. They can be denied service based on your personal convictions. And you will find this the moral position as you treat humans as, in some ways, inhuman. You're part of a mechanism that treats the United States like it's better than the rest of the world, as if we have a monopoly on goodness and freedom. What, we're better because we were born inside these subjectively drawn borders? Fly the flag, hand over heart, say the pledge. In fact, you are forced to say the pledge of allegiance in the name of freedom.
I think children today should be required to say a freedom oath.
People say this without any sense of irony.
Yeah, they must be mandated to say they love their country. This almost sounds like the Christian Bible.
Commanded to love God. How do you command someone to experience and feel genuine love for someone or something else? How does that work exactly? My buddy Dave Warnock, who runs the Dying Out Loud website. He continues to do what he does as an activist, knowing that his body is on the decline. He has already been planning his own exit, right? I mean, he thinks in those terms. He says, I have ALS. There is no cure. What will the final days of my life be? And the Republican Party believes that end-of-life decisions, well, that's God's thing. Only God can decide. My father died of pulmonary fibrosis. The scar tissue in his lungs caused him to increasingly heave and gasp and heave and gasp. And so they bring in the oxygen machine. And when it can't keep up, they bring in a bigger oxygen machine. And when that machine can't keep up, they jack him up with morphine so at least he won't panic while he's writhing in his bed. This goes on 4 days. He finally gives out at 2 o'clock in the morning, and my family thanks Jesus that he died in the night as we prayed, as if he had just sort of peacefully gone to be with the Lord. There is no concept, there is no notion that my father, had he wanted it, and I know he didn't because he was a devout Christian, but you know, he had the right to go with dignity. He knew there was no way out. Imagine if he had opened his mind and heart to the possibility that he could say goodbye at the moment of his choosing, and he could peacefully fall asleep before his body turned into a suffocating, writhing nightmare. And who is standing against that right in the name of God? It's a political party, and it's not the liberals, it's not the Democrats, it's those Bible-banging R's. Who is in love with guns? 400 million guns in this country. And when I say, how many more guns do you need for us to be safe? They look at me and say, well, Seth is anti-gun. Well, that's an oversimplification, because I do have a couple of firearms that I keep in a safe and occasionally target shoot, but my guns aren't part of my identity. It was Jon Stewart on his television show. He was doing an interview a few weeks back with Oklahoma State Senator Nathan Dom. And Nathan Dom is, ringing the bell about the Second Amendment and how we need to deregulate access to guns in the name of protection and freedom. And Jon Stewart looks at him and says, well, at what point, with 400 more firearms than citizens in this country, at what point do we pass that bar? When do we become safe? Like, when did we get there? How many do you need? And the guy totally vapor locks, I got people waving their guns in this town. When they passed open carry in the state of Oklahoma, I shit you not, there was a guy who packed on a two-gun holster, just like the Old West. He had a gun on each hip, and just to show how free he was, started walking around the courthouse buildings downtown. He just decided, I'm going to go show everybody how damn free I am. Here's my two guns. I'm going to go walk around with my two barrels in full display and show everybody what freedom really is. Which party sees more of that insanity? I think it's the Republicans, don't you? Who's dragging their Bibles into school board meetings? Who's trying to ban the books because God? Who's infecting secular city council meetings by insisting that the invocation/prayers are all supposed to be Christian and nothing else? Who opposes climate change science and clean energy policies or even proposals? Because wouldn't it be nice to build a better, cleaner, safer, less polluted world? I mean, even if you didn't believe that climate change was an increasing problem, just the notion that we would do better, that we would pollute less, that we would contaminate less, that we would pursue the cleanest and most efficient and most protective versions of what we do. I mean, how is that even controversial? And who's against it? It's over here. One particular party talking about how it'll be a cold day in hell before I drive one of them liberal cars. Part of that conversation includes the proliferation, or, the rise at least, of the electric vehicles. Well, you can get into lithium battery technology and disposal and waste. These are necessary and interesting conversations, but the whole idea for them is black smoke coming out of the tailpipe of my truck is a symbol of freedom. They lean into the Old Testament's eye for an eye verses to support the death penalty, which I've come to see as barbaric, inappropriately applied, usually against people of color and the poor, those who can't afford proper representation. We've seen so many instances of injustice, reversals, new evidence came to light. And beyond all of that, how about the economics of it? It's actually more expensive to put somebody on death row than it is to imprison them for life. You would think the capitalists would see that and say, that makes a lot of sense. No. And you know which party wants to kill the killers? It's the Republicans. Do not tell me. It's not the Democrats on the Supreme Court that are planting their dominionist flags in the uteruses of 166 million women. You'd fold your arms all you want. And you can say, well, it's all equally bad all you want. None of that makes what you say not bullshit. And here I am, I'm sitting at a table in Strawberry Red, Oklahoma, once again fully aware that I'm alone, or almost alone, as far as my knowledge, I'm alone in my values and what I'm fighting for. And am I sitting at the table with people who are working against me? And how is that work? And do I draw the hard line? Do I end the friendship? Do I pound on the table and say, what the hell is wrong with you people? Do I try to humanize my own value system, my own person and position, in an attempt to try to bring their walls down so that we can have mind-changing, opinion-changing conversations about the things that matter? All I know is at the end of the day, I leave and I just feel sad. I'm struck by how much energy, gleeful energy, is positioned towards not sharing the world equally with other people and often taking advantage of other people. How do we work the system? If somebody's smart enough to work the system, maybe the system deserves to be worked. And if you're taken advantage of, well, you know, that's kind of your problem for being so vulnerable. And here's yet another reason why that is a sensitive nerve. I got a call from my CPA. It is tax season in the United States, and isn't that always a joy? Despite my occasional frustrations with the bureaucracy and inefficiency and waste that we have all seen our tax dollars go to, I think most recently the one on my mind is all the bank bailouts, right? I get it. I'm part of a society. My taxes fund the support structure for that society, and I totally get that. So tax season comes around, I bite the bullets, I write the check, and I get a call from my CPA who says, well, I filed your taxes for 2022, and those taxes were rejected by the Internal Revenue Service. Wait a minute. Why did the IRS reject my taxes? Well, Seth, their records say that you have already filed. Well, what's that about? Seth, you have been the victim of identity theft. By the way, I think this may be the first time in history that anybody has ever purposefully wanted to be me. So apparently this is a major, M-A-J-O-R, major problem, a scam that has been going on increasingly since 2015. Somebody steals your social, right, your social security number, and they file taxes under your name, and they list a ton of dependents. And those dependents bring about a tax credit, which produces a refund check that that scammer receives at the false address that they put on the form. And then they go and launder the money through Bitcoin. This is how it was explained to me. And the idea, I guess, is that it's untraceable. This is a billions of dollars scam that I was just made aware of because, you know, it happened to me. And this is fun. Turns out that it'll be 6 to 9 months before the IRS even opens the envelope containing my affidavit of identity theft and starts the case. So the whole time I'm waiting on them to investigate, I remain unprotected for 2023, meaning that the scammer might be able to do it again before anyone notices, and lo and behold, I end up on a hamster wheel that I may not get off of for years. Oh, it's been that kind of month. I guess it's all first world problems when you look at it, but it's still frustrating. And I do, I think, what if the people who spend all this time scamming other people and trying to grift and take advantage and work the system in these illegal and immoral ways, what if they committed themselves to doing it right, playing by the rules, building, constructing, helping, being good? Imagine what we might accomplish as a species. Say goodbye to corruption and abuse and war, and we could all hold hands and advance and evolve as the human condition together. And of course, you and I know that as long as there is an opportunity, as long as there is a scam, as long as there is easy money, and as long as there are awful people, that dream will always remain a dream. And I think it's just sad. And I sometimes feel overwhelmed by it. Do you ever feel overwhelmed? You wonder sometimes, are there more bad people than good people? I don't think so. But I don't always feel so. And I have to be cognizant of the difference, right? Instead of ruminating, I must objectively, as best I can, reflect and be honest about what's really going on. I don't know. That's a little window into my life. I don't mean to burden you, but it's, you know, some people I think are interested in what informs the attitude of the host, and that's kind of where I'm at. I'm interested in where you are at. My copywriter would kill me for saying that sentence in that way, like ending with the preposition, where you are at. But I mean, where you're at, where are you at right now as we go to the phones to find out? 612. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Manuela.
Manuela, did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, forgive me, I'm a bit nervous. English is not my first language,
no, you
so
sound
forgive
great.
Me for any mistakes.
Doing great.
I'm from Europe, and something that I noticed since I moved to the United States is how much Americans seem to hate children. For example, like, you can't bring them in public without people going like, can't that thing shut up? With literally saying the thing and complaining about people bringing their children in public, not like them going, you know, climbing up the shelves in Walmart or something, just normal kids who are making noise and people are losing their literal mind over it. And I was just wondering, for a country that's so much about family values, it sounds like they hate children a lot.
Well, that's interesting. It has not been my experience. I don't have any kids of my own, but usually in my experience, unless they are unruly and banging around and screaming and carrying on and somebody takes them into a movie theater or, you know, something like the library, I haven't in my own life as an American seen that, but obviously it has been your experience and I'm sorry that it has been.
Yeah, it has. Literally people saying that you shouldn't bring children into a restaurant because they pay to eat their dinner in peace and quiet. And if that thing can't shut up, then leave it at home.
Well, I'm very sorry that that has happened to you. Just know that there are some people, even those who are child-free, like me, who, you know, unless the kid's banging my seat on an airplane or screaming in my ear somewhere, I mean, I'm easy. I'm good with it. So people like me exist. Okay, Manuela?
Okay.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit that there are some of us who do better and some who do not do better when it comes to a lot of noise created by children. I'm good. Like, I'm really fine. I think, you know, family should be able to go out and spend family time together. I do have a problem when unruly kids start to spoil the experience for other people. I don't think that's what my caller was necessarily talking about. I am child-free. Like, I never had kids. Natalie's got a couple of grown children who are beautiful. They are my family, and I love them with all my heart. But I myself never had that instinct. And in a highly religious family, it's raised a lot of people's eyebrows. I was 22 when I started my first marriage of 18 years. I'm just a kid. I'm 22. But at that moment, I had no desire to be a parent. And my then wife had no desire to be a parent. And we said so. Like, we're not interested in having kids. And everybody around us patted us on the head and said, oh, one day you're going to wake up and you're just going to want to have a little bundle of joy and you're going to be ready to be a mother and father. Okay, well, if that day comes, we'll let you know. So a year passed. Oh, one day, you're still young. 3 years passed, 5 years passed, 7 years passed, and I noticed that everybody around me started to get kind of quiet. And I felt, it's nothing that they said, I felt this attitude that they thought I was just selfish. You're just all about yourself. Why don't you want to have kids? I mean, what is that about? You just want to come and go as you please. You're not interested in other people. And here's the fun one. Seth hates children. I'm sorry, I hate children? Where did that come from? So much of these attitudes, especially in religion, rooted in the Bible, be fruitful and multiply. You're supposed to go and have children. And there's this attitude that if you don't have kids, there's something wrong with you. And I've fielded that for a long, long time. And even now, I sense it from some people who are just a little bit self-conscious. I don't know, maybe they secretly envy the fact that somebody calls me at the last second because they need someone to fill in on a tennis match. I can just leave. All right, I'll be there in 22 minutes. Hey, do you feel like going out tonight? Let's just leave and go do that. Would you like to spend a weekend with your brother in Kansas City? It's Friday afternoon. We could be there by 9. Let's grab the dogs, hop in the car. We got nothing else to do. That kind of freedom. I do wonder if some people, the self-conscious people, maybe secretly envy that. But I'll admit there are certain joys in my life that I know I will never get. I'll never experience the birth of a baby in the delivery room. I'll never experience the joy of watching that child grow. I'll never be there for the first steps, the first day at school, being involved in sports or band or the arts or whatever, and being that parent in the audience cheering on my child, watching the graduation, seeing the child grow to become an adult and start a family of their own, and then grandchildren. I understand there are certain types of love, there are certain experiences, beautiful experiences, that I myself will never get. But while other people lament that for me, I simply want to look them in the eye and say, it's okay. I've come to terms with it because for me, the parental gene has just never been there. And I just don't think you have kids because you're supposed to, because the Bible tells you to, because mom and dad want grandchildren, or because you're worried that person X is going to think you're selfish. Like, your expectations really should have no effect on whether or not I decide to bring a human being into the world and make a lifelong commitment to that person. I just never had it. You know, I just never got there. I don't hate kids. I'm not anti-family. And I'm not one of those Americans that this caller experienced who thinks everything in public should be an adults-only experience. I mean, and you know, unless it's a rare designated spot, you know, if you're at Applebee's, I don't know, I'm just rambling. I've got 919. Tell me your name.
Donovan.
Donovan, what's on your mind?
I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about autism and autism, because one of the things that I kind of discovered in my own discovery over the last year has been being autistic has an increased chance of being an atheist.
Is it the filtering of emotion in different ways that someone autistic might experience has made them less susceptible to the experiential?
Personally, from my own perspective as an autistic person myself, I think it's having a more analytical mind given me the question, even when I was raised as a Christian.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know either way. It's highly possible that somebody who is more analytical will reject more of the experiential and add 2 + 2 and come up with 4. I mean, it's very possible, certainly.
Yeah, part of the reason why that kind of comes up to my mind as well is like both being autistic and being also an atheist kind of been an intersection that I've been trying to figure out on how they interact with each other, because for both of them, I'm normal passing to most people. So it makes me wonder, like, especially like with me taking a social deviance class this semester, like, how does that affect my role in society?
These are questions that are beyond me. Once again, I'm not an expert in mental health or autism, but what you've done is I think you've given those of us who are listening to your story something to talk about, to be able to exchange ideas on the subject. And I would encourage our listeners to do so. If maybe you've made that connection or you have a mental health resource or you've done the homework on it, the comment section is all yours, and we'll come back and review and see what you come up with. I appreciate the call very much. Thanks for giving us something to chew on.
Yep, have a good day.
All right, see you later. Emily at 757, are you there?
Yeah. Well, first I wanted to say thank you for talking about childlessness by choice. I think it's something that I'm really glad that we're finally talking about. So the reason that I called was I wanted to, from your perspective, see, does it ever change when someone, or that feeling that you have inside, when someone that you've known from the former you says, oh, I hear that you have a church problem or a God problem, and that you're, you know, that your family, you kind of have a distance there. Does that feeling of wanting to just have defensiveness kind of ever dissipate?
Well, I think that's specific to you. You know, I can't tell you how you would feel about someone who is offering up a kind of, I don't know, a rationalization as to why you reject their faith. You must be the one to determine how you feel, what you feel. Are those feelings valid? What do you do about those feelings? So I can't really speak to that. I do know that perceptions can change. I think relationships are always in a state of evolution or de-evolution. And I think, you know, you set your boundaries and decide how much you're willing to put up with. And if someone's love is conditional, that's information you can use to make the decision, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Emily. Makes sense. Hang in there.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, see you. Kevin at 850. Hi, are you there?
Seth, good afternoon or good morning, whatever it is in your neck of the woods.
Whatever, yeah. I don't even have a clock in my office. Just... What's on your mind, brother?
Well, first and foremost, I just wanted to pay a compliment and just tell you that you're just such a pro, my friend. You really are.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, your heart and your just how genuine you are comes across in spades in everything that you do. And I just wanted to give you a heads up on that, on how I feel.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate the kind words. It means a lot.
And then just in general, you know, it's kind of an interesting experience to be talking to you, because you're one of the guys that, I guess it's about 3 years now that I don't know if you call it deconversion or whatever. I claimed to be a Christian, and, you know, I was driving, I lived in a van for 3.5 years, and I was driving down the road listening to YouTube and stumbled upon a Christopher Hitchens video. I think he was debating Frank Turek. And I went into that, I think it was 1.5 hours, and I went into listening to that with a bias that the theist was going to kick the atheist's ass. And at the end of it, I said, oh my gosh, I have a terrible problem. You know, because I was always really uncomfortable with so many of the components of faith and belief and all that. I mean, it just never made sense to me that I was taken care of and that there were so many people that, you know, their basic crime was being born in the wrong place, you know, and they were, you know, kids starving to death. And here was this knucklehead like me being supposedly taken care of by something out there that loved me more than I could possibly imagine when I didn't feel like I deserved it. You know, there was nothing special about me in that sense. So I became an atheist. You know, I prefer non-believer, but and my life has improved exponentially as a result. I was a happy guy before. I'm happier now because I feel like I'm being honest with myself and with the people around me. And it's guys like you that have helped me do that.
Oh, thank you, man. Hey, by the way, if you want a lesson in daily madness, follow Frank Turek on Twitter. It's like a daily dose of empty calorie platitude nothingness. I mean, just illogic that comes out of his pages. I followed for a few days, and I had to go and just unfollow and close my eyes and block my ears because the apologists, to see them play that game of Twister to excuse the inexcusable, and then they look down their noses at the rest of us as if they're supposed to be making sense. Frank Turek, no wonder Christopher Hitchens kicked his ass, right? I mean, he was a minnow swimming among the sharks.
Yeah, I try to avoid a lot of conversations anymore. I kind of dovetail on what you opened your live stream with, being melancholy and whatnot. And, you know, looking at the events of the world and now talking about Twitter, I don't have any social media. I don't watch. I know basically what's going on in the world, but not the details. You know, I just feel like since I don't have any way to truly affect them on a macro level, I don't pay attention to them on that level. And I still have basic struggles, but for the most part, I feel like that's a better policy for me. Maybe it's a cop out, but I just can't pay attention, you know?
Well, I don't think managing how much bullshit gets thrown in your face is the same as sticking your head in the sand. I would assume you're relatively informed about what's going on in the world. But I also think, you know, we can establish some filters to try to limit the madness. I think that's totally valid, brother.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, I do have a general sense of what's going on in the world. Part of the reason that I don't pay as much of the attention that I used to is because I'm proud to say I'm a former expert on everything. I mean, a decade ago, I could have told you what was going on in Ukraine and why Silicon Valley Bank crashed and all this other stuff. I don't know. I really don't know. You know, it's sort of like the same thing as being a non-believer. How can you know so many of the things that people claim that they do? So, yeah, I just mind my own business, but I guess I'll just kind of try to end with this, and that's that I'm also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been in AA for a long time. And having become a non-believer, it's been interesting.
Yeah, with a higher power model, yeah.
Yeah, the higher power thing. And, you know, people just invent their own God. And, you know, mine does this and mine does that. And again, kind of going back to my own personal journey, none of that ever made sense to me. And so when I was finally able to just be honest with myself and the rest of the people around me, it just felt better, you know, it just felt better. And, you know, I use the idea put forth by Marcus Aurelius. If there are gods and they are just, then they won't care how devout that I've been. If there are gods and they are not just, well, I don't want to worship them. And if there are no gods, well, I have lived a good life. And hopefully I'll be remembered for a little while by a few people. That's it.
You speak wisdom, Kevin. I appreciate the kind words and the call. Hang in there.
You too, my brother. No. Hey, I wish I was going to be able to go to Phoenix, but I ain't got the cash, bro.
I got you. The speech that I'm giving will eventually post online, probably closer to summertime once I'm done with this. I hate to say after I'm done touring with it because I'm trying to sound like the Rolling Stones, which I'm not, but it will eventually go to YouTube, so you'll be able to see it soon, okay?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, brother.
See you later.
Have a great day. Peace.
It's funny. Yeah, he's right. Especially when I think you're in a fundamentalist culture, you have this weird confidence about how much you know. It's like I was a graduate with honors from Dunning-Kruger U. I mean, I was an expert on so much that I knew nothing about, and that I would be smug about all the answers that I had. And then you escape that culture and you start to look around and you start to know how much you don't know. And beyond that, the liberation of being able to say those words. In some cultures, I don't know, is considered an expression of weakness. How could you not know? You don't know? Well, you should know. I know. But the truth is, it's the answer. Sometimes it's an honest answer. I don't know. How did the universe begin? Where did the first cell come from? Or whatever. I don't know. I have no idea. Of course, I'm thinking to myself, you don't know either. Sometimes I'll say that out loud. You can bang the book of Genesis all you want. Trust me, you don't know how the universe started. You got a story, you got a claim that needs to meet a burden to prove, but I don't know, and neither do you. More of whatever it is you want to talk about in just a second. Hang on. Thank you so much to all of my supporters on Patreon who get this show early and commercial-free, but most importantly, they help me to do what I do. If I can be candid, I know that COVID, the last few years, have been kind of hard on people who have been supported by Patreon dollars, and I totally get it. I mean, the economy was in the tank, and everybody's job situation had changed, and they were scrounging for every penny, and so a lot of us saw many of our patrons have to go and take care of business in their own circles. But it does mean that some of us are trying to make up that lost ground. So if you enjoyed the show and you want to support it for, I don't know, $1, $4, $5 a month or whatever, it does make a difference. It's huge for podcasters like me. You can go to patreon.com/SethAndrews. And thank you so much for your support. Joseph at 215, thanks for waiting. Are you there?
Is this me?
This is you. What's on your mind?
Oh, okay. Well, the bleeps, and I didn't hear you say my name. It's Joseph here in Philadelphia.
Joseph, I'm glad I'm not the only one on the show today with a biblical name. That's refreshing.
Yeah. I've thought about changing it.
No.
I've been in this journey at this point about 4 years. I initially, well, first of all, I'm gay and I'm married to a man, and his sister is gay and married to a woman. And I was going to a Catholic church 7 days a week serving at the altar. And the week before John and I got married, they had a service. All the readings were about marriage. And I said, what am I doing here? The Catholic Church does not accept me. They would never, ever let me go in there and be married in a Catholic church. I said, why am I doing this? And so my first getting out of Christianity was deism. And that didn't last long because you go on YouTube and the other videos that come up are atheist videos. And so I started listening to you and a few others. And I said, this makes more sense to me. But the reason I called is my husband had some physical problems within the hospital, and of course his sister has to talk to me to find out how he's doing. She knows I do not believe. She is a very nominal cafeteria Catholic. Well, I believe in God, and you know that, so we just won't talk about that. Okay, but she's also 100% like some kind of Reiki master, which I think is sort of odd compared to Catholicism. And we're talking about John's condition. And then we get on other subjects, and I said, you know, I've called our congressmen and our senators to try and get them to propose a bill to change the motto of the United States back to the original motto, E Pluribus, I can't say it. E pure, I can't say.
No, no, no,
it.
I got
what
you.
Is it?
E pluribus unum. It means out of many,
thank
one.
You.
And yeah, it was the original
right.
Motto before In God We Trust was added later on.
In like 1956 because of the Red Scare.
Yeah.
And she said, Joseph, I don't want to talk about that. I said, I'm not making fun of your religion or anything. I'm talking about the motto of the United States. She said, Joseph, I don't want to talk about that. If you keep talking about that, I'm going to hang up on you. And I said, okay. And it's like, I'm talking about politics. I'm talking about the motto of the United States. And the biggest problem is I'm still an angry atheist, but you've calmed me down a little bit.
No, I'm angry too. Trust me. I was at a dinner table with a bunch of people the other night. This was just last week. And politics came up. And I'm having that whole cost-benefit discussion, right? I did not come here to get into it about politics, but at the same time, it is important. And somebody said, well, you know, I really like Ron DeSantis for president in 2024. And I almost crawled out of my skin, climbed over the table, and grabbed them by the throat. I didn't do it, but I had that inclination. So I get angry just like you do, and I think anger is the appropriate response. But as far as the sister is concerned, I mean, if she's not ramming her... I've never heard Catholicism and Reiki in the same room together. That's a weird convergence of belief system. You know, I got Catholic Church and Reiki healing energies, chakras and shit like that. That's weird.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. And she asked me to tell John. She said, tell John I'm sending Reiki to him. She lives in, guess where? Florida. And she hates DeSantis. We can agree on that.
Okay. How do you send Reiki to someone? I thought Reiki was a practice. I think you stand over someone and you hold your hands
out.
Yeah,
she believes you can send it long distance.
Like, does AT&T charge extra for that? Do you need fiber? Do you need fiber optics for Reiki to go through the landline? I have questions about long-distance Reiki. I'm sorry for your partner's troubles.
He's home.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was going to say, is there anything we can do, right?
No, but she, you know, and I do, because of you, I said to John, your sister Rose is praying for you and sending Reiki to you. And I did it against my better judgment. I think it's silly, but I told him that. And he said, well, that's nice. But I just don't understand why she can't talk about the motto of the United States.
Well,
she thinks it's somehow an attack against God or religion.
Well, we're talking about a belief linked to her identity, right? She lives in a confirmation bubble. And anything that disconfirms her pre-established notions about the world, she's going to feel like this is a virus that's entering her healthy body and she has to inoculate herself. And why would she want to live in a world where her deeply held beliefs are challenged by those pesky data points and facts in the history of the United States? No, no, I don't even want to hear it. I've been in conversations with people and they will tell me outright, Seth, I don't care what you say. I don't care what facts you present. I don't care what the evidence says. You will never change my mind. And I'm so struck by that because it's a proud declaration that you will never improve your perspective when you get better information. And that's the frustration you're feeling, right, Joseph?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I've had thoughts of, well, gee, I just don't even want to talk to her. But she's not strict. I mean, she's not like some fundamentalist Catholic. She's a lesbian.
I wouldn't sweat it.
Doesn't
I would
she know
not,
what the Catholic Church teaches?
For your sanity's sake, I wouldn't spend too much time trying to change her mind. I think, you know, it's healthy for her to be not confronted, but to experience a conflicting point of view, you know, a disagreeing perspective. We certainly don't want to feel like we're bubble wrapping ourselves to keep her comfortable, but changing her mind is that's probably a long game. I would focus more on you being true to you, taking care of your husband's, you know, living your own values. And you know, who knows, maybe someday she'll actually, you know, maybe there'll be that. How was that said? David McRaney called it the crack that lets in the light. Maybe one day that crack will sort of hit the veneer and she'll be able. Did I say veneer? Oh, my God. That's a total Oklahoma. It snuck out. I said the word veneer. I'm sorry. Anyway, hopefully one day she'll maybe tap you on the shoulder and you guys can have the conversation where she feels more safe. But I wouldn't beat yourself up because she's not going to bend. It's just, I think it's the nature of the beast. Okay?
Yeah, it's just frustrating because it was just a conversation. I wasn't trying to affect her own belief system. I was talking about the country and the fact that Benjamin Franklin, Jefferson, and Adams were commissioned to create a seal of the United States. And the only thing that they came up with, and they came up with some weird ideas, was E pluribus unum. It's stuck.
Joseph, I appreciate you. And E pluribus unum, I'm sending that down the fiber optic, right? Out of men. I'm sending the motto of the United States instead of Reiki to you. That's more grounded. And you be safe and take care of yourself, okay?
Okay, thank you.
See you later. I'm sending you Reiki. I've just never heard it phrased like that. But I guess it's possible. I mean, I was talking to Susan Gerbic on the Grief Vampires podcast, and they were talking about doing psychic readings on Zoom. So I guess if you can read someone's, you know, their psyche and talk to their dead mother or grandmother or whoever, and you can do so on the internet, I suppose, you know. But can you do high speed? Do you need an Ethernet? Can you do it over the standard phone lines? I mean, I have questions. I have questions about sending down the Reiki. Let's see. Chris at 706. Are you there?
I am.
Thanks for calling. What do you want to talk about?
You know, I'm pretty well into my journey of coming out of religion. I was raised in a very Southern Baptist, sweating and spitting in the pulpit kind of church. And I've left home. I'm active duty military, and I've just completely fallen out of kind of the stuff I was raised in. And as of now, my little sister, who still lives in that area, is the only one who really knows other than my wife. And I wanted to see if you had any nuggets of wisdom about how to handle bringing up to my parents, who are still very much religious. They've left kind of the more extreme version that we were in when I was younger. They're more in more of that kind of more progressive kind of First Baptist church now, but still hold on to that very strongly. And my thoughts have been to not push the issue, let it come up naturally so that they don't feel too blindsided about it. But do you have any, you know, little pieces of wisdom?
Well, you're talking to somebody who has been bitching on the podcast for 13, 14 years about his own failures with his family. But I can do this for you. I can't tell you the approach that will create a positive response from your mother and father. What I can do is to encourage you that whatever you do needs to not be about them as much as it is about you. I do think walking in with data points and trying to dissect the Bible and convince them, you know, to try to validate, because I think we all want to do that. Here are the legitimate concerns I have about religion. Did you know that this is wrong and this is contradictory and God said this and he commanded rape in the Bible and he wants to silence women and there was genocide of 500,000 people and blah, blah. And so you go in and you're trying to be heard and saying, as a moral creature, as someone who wants to be about the truth, these are the reasons. And I think that's a temptation that many of us have. But I've become more and more convinced that this does not change minds and usually only creates problems, at least at the front end. I think you don't walk in with data points. I think you walk in and you say, look, I wanted to share with you that I have been on a journey and I have been navigating some questions and concerns about some things. And I have come to a position here that, you know, I'm not convinced. Right? This is language that is sort of softer, but I don't think it's weaker. You know, I'm not convinced. I've got some real problems with this. And I just wanted you to know that I'm on this journey and that whatever is true, I'm making a commitment to you that that's what I want. And if God shows up, then I want to know that. You know, I think the reassurance that life is a journey, you're taking your own on your own terms, and whatever is true, you want that to be a part of your journey as well. I would keep the first conversation short, right? Short. they are going to throw the hooks out. They're going to want to suck you into a long form conversation. Then things are going to become frustrated, probably heated. Someone's going to leave pissed off or whatever. I would try to avoid that at all costs. The first conversation is merely putting it on their radar in a soft way. This is my journey. Here's where I'm at. I don't want to talk through it at the moment, but I feel like I wanted you to know that I'm kind of here. And, we can talk more about it down the way, right? Then you let that sink in. And then the rest of those conversations, I think, can come afterward. But at the end of the day, your job will not be to convince them. Never walk in saying, I'm going to fix them or convince them that I am right or that I have a point. We would love for that to happen, but I don't think that's the goal. The goal is for you to go in and say, this is my journey. I'm taking it on my terms. There are some boundaries I've established that I'm going to ask you to observe. And I commit to you that I want to live a truthful life. I think that's the goal. It's really more about you than it's about them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. It does.
I cannot reiterate this enough. That first conversation, trust me, you will go in and you'll want to make it 10 minutes and they are going to want to suck you into a 90-minute prayer meeting or a debate club. Mm-hmm. Do not take that bait, right? Skip out of that conversation, draw a hard line on that conversation, but that first one, keep it short. And that's my advice to you, okay?
Thank you. And before I let you go, I actually found your channel a little later into my deconstruction and deconversion, actually through the video you did with Forrest and Erica, who both of them were people that I learned a lot from very early on. People like them and Dapper Dino and R&Raw Apologia. So all of you guys doing what you do, it makes a big difference in a lot of people's lives, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Oh, it means a lot. And I'll pass the word on when I bump into those folks on the road. So good luck with your family. And, you know, if something happens that is notable, feel free to call back. Give us the update, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you later. I remember when I was having lunch with my sister and a friend of hers, both devoutly religious, and her friend said, well, can you tell me why you're no longer a Christian? This was years ago before I'd evolved my own thinking. And I just went to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And I started, did you know there are two conflicting versions of the Genesis story? Did you know that the geologic column totally disproves the biblical claim that there was a global flood? Did you know that there are four conflicting versions of the empty tomb story with Jesus and that the nativity story changes from book to book between Matthew and Luke? Did you know that Jesus went to different places after the Sermon on the Mount? I was throwing all the data points, and you should have seen her face. She just glazed over and finally interrupted me. No. I ask you why you are no longer a Christian, right? She wasn't hearing the data points. In fact, she doubled down and bristled, and it's like her skin got thicker to resist the facts that I was presenting. She was operating from a different frequency, and I wish I had used a different tactic with her. I wish I had used more of an introductory methods. I went back to the Bible and I began to look at it more objectively, and I had some real concerns. And so I've been on this journey, and you know, I've come to the point now where I'm just not convinced. And I'm still a good person, and I'm a pursuer of truth. You know, I'm still the same guy you've always known. But for my part, I don't find this convincing. It's not right for me. Anyway, and I certainly respect the freedom of someone else to be religious, but I also, you know, I'm not an opponent of religion. I'm simply an opponent of religious privilege, people telling other people what to think, how to behave, what to do, who to be. I'm an opponent of that, but if you believe in God, you know, I wish you a truthful journey and an honest journey, and whatever's true, let's do that. I mean, I would have said something along those lines because I think it would have done a better job of keeping them off the defensive. Wasn't condescending, and I don't know. That's just my perspective, and I may be totally wrong. Terry at 248. Are you there?
I am here, Seth. Thanks for taking my call.
Lo, you are with us always. Terry, what's on your mind?
Lo, I am with you. Well, you know, a week or so ago, I was watching some clips on the internet, and I saw this guy named Sean McDowell. I don't know if you know of him. He's an apologist from Biola University, and he was at a Christian university pretending to be an atheist and taking questions from the crowd. He didn't speak very long before he started taking questions, and was actually had some good responses to the students' questions, and then stopped and admitted that he was not an atheist, but was an apologist to a professor at Biola University. And I wondered if you've ever heard of him and if you've ever seen his clips or wanted to debate him or anything like that.
I've heard of Josh McDowell. I'm suspicious this may be Josh's son. A lot of these things are dynasties. It's almost like Jerry Falwell Jr. and Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham. That would be my suspicion. More interestingly, I've heard you go out and you talk to either Christians or atheists under, if not false pretenses, it's more of a lab experiment trying to expose how the atheists think and to somehow prove the facts of Christianity. I'm not too impressed by that kind of stuff. When you saw him playing the atheist, did he sound like the rest of us?
He had a lot of the same points to make, but one of his that I thought was a little strange was when he was talking about whether the universe always existed or whether it had a beginning. And he went down the path of a multiverse and used that to justify that is why he thought that the universe always existed. It just seemed like a very odd tact to try to take. And that's why I started to question it at first. And then when he said he was an apologist, then it kind of all came together for me. But he was making some good points at a students' questions.
It's funny. I'm not a cosmologist. Does a multiverse require that the universe had no beginning? I think that is maybe a non sequitur. I don't know. That doesn't really ring for me. I do hear the how did it all start? Or one of my favorites is when I'm talking about how the Genesis origin story for all of, you know, the universe is totally unproven. In fact, it's been debunked. And they say, well, something started all of this. And I just look them in the eye and say, on this, you and I agree, right? Something happened. I mean, I think that's pretty basic, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, and maybe a few of them should read Lawrence Krauss's book, Something from Nothing.
I'm interested in the singularity and measuring the universe as it expands. And then it's supposed to one day start contracting. And I read earlier that the Milky Way is going to collide with another galaxy in a certain measure of time, not in our lifetimes, not even in the immediate future, like millions of years. But they're saying that our galaxy is going to smash into another galaxy. And won't that be fun? All this is really, really interesting. But beyond that, when someone says, I'm a believer, but I'm either acting like an atheist or I'm representing the atheist or whatever, almost always they totally get it wrong. A great example is when they talk about the origins of the universe. Atheism doesn't make a claim about how the universe began. Right? Atheism is simply a lack of belief in God. I am not convinced. I do not believe in a God. It doesn't say anything necessarily about anything else. And so the fact that he's walking in with questions about the origins of all things, that to me is not something that an atheist would necessarily lead with.
Yes, as soon as he made the announcement that he was an apologist, I knew he was going to start going into his explanations of his playing an atheist response, and I just kind of hit stop.
It just sounds like it sounds like he went to Straw Man City, right? He just sets things up and he misrepresents what being unconvinced in God claims is, knocks him over, pats himself on the back, and then goes and makes a YouTube video about it. And this is a common apologist tactic out there. But, you know, beyond all of that, the questions and answers, why would God entrust this guy, Sean McDowell? Why wouldn't God come down and talk to the college students one-on-one? I don't get that.
Exactly. Yeah. That would have been a hell of a speech if that would have happened.
I'd be there for that. I'd buy tickets for that. Right? I'm an atheist. And if Jesus, Allah, Thor, Wotan, whoever, he wants to come down and be a god, and I want to have that conversation, I'll buy, right? I'll take you to coffee. Let's do that. And that's one thing that many believers don't allow, that atheists really do want, is truth. And if there is a god, I would want to know that. And then the next questions are you a good god, a bad god, a worthy god, a god worth following? You know, there's a whole other series of questions that come after that. But that's another example of the apologists doing apologetics things. Terry, thanks so much for calling. Be safe out there, okay?
Thanks. Take care,
sir. All right, we'll see you later. I wrote a chapter in my latest book, Christianity Made Me Talk Like an Idiot, that gets into many of the apologists, just the pathetic ways that they represent the rest of us or try to defend the indefensible. And the apologists can't agree with each other on the basic stuff. It's just, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the whole concept is God looks down and says, hey, Sean McDowell, go defend me on YouTube. What is that, if not arrogance? That's all I got today. I hope you have a wonderful week. I'm going to go and start kind of nibble away and tweak the speech for American Atheist Convention in Phoenix. Grab some coffee, pet the dogs, and I will see you back here next time. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring The Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.